6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we'll begin our two-part coverage of the Blood Angels Legion, with a focus on kind of their origins in the Unification Wars, their formation as the Ninth Legion, and of course the arrival of Sanguinius, and then the departure of Sanguinius.
He wasn't Space Jesus.
Yeah, that's who he is. As always, the 40K Lorecast is a weekly podcast focusing on the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, with new episodes releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Before we begin, I always ask that you please follow the show if you're on Spotify, or like if you're not on Spotify. If you could leave a comment, just know I do read them all, and I appreciate those of you who have a pretty good sense of humor. So please leave fun comments. It makes my morning enjoyable. Additionally, if you go to the About on the show, you'll see links to our website, the40klorecast.com, our Discord, and our Patreon. Our website's becoming one of the best places to go to for information on the cast. It's got that information, our merchandise, Brad's coaching services, details about upcoming 40K events. Right now, there's only one, but there's going to be more.
We're pretty proud of this, though. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be a really fun event we're having again.
I'm very confident, and I say this, and probably so much stuff will happen, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah, it'll be great.
I'm excited. As a longtime player, I know exactly what I want from this, and I want people to be happy. I want people to have a good time. If you show up, even if you're not a player, it would be great to see you on June 7th.
And Brad is doing everything he can to stop me ruining the event for all the competitive players by adding in weird rules.
So much.
It's just vortex mine. Anyway, we also have a link to the Discord in there. If you like what we're doing here and you're looking to interact more around the lore of 40K, please join our Discord. It's completely free to join and was built with kind of our community in mind. It's a spot where you can interact on topics covering the cast. You can talk to other listeners of the cast about things like literature, gameplay, hobbying, general just, BS because it's fun, etc. Brad and I are in there a lot, too. It really is a great way to kind of build.
It's a great way to interact with other people that share your interest. Learn about 40K. Learn about anything. We talk about books, movies. And there's a channel for everything. They're all very active, and a lot of things are always going on. I feel like there's always a new thread every single day.
They're constantly making improvements to it. And by they, I mean our moderators, who huge thanks to Kevin, Maisie, Brian, Ethan, Steve, Ryan, Trevor, and David. They've done a great job of moderating it, and they've kept it a very fun and positive place for any of you to join into. Lastly, we always also talk about Brad is a coach of Warhammer 40K. For those of you that either want to play the game on the tabletop or even online via the TTS system, Brad has coaching services available. 30 years of playing the game, decade of coaching on top of that. He's a massive repository of knowledge about the game. So if you're interested, you can either go to the 40klorecast.com to learn more, or if you join our Discord, you can contact him directly. There's a link there for contacting about coaching services.
Which I'm almost exclusively using now.
Yes, makes more sense, actually. You mean yelling your email address? All right, with that, on to the cast. So really, I should start high on these. What are the Blood Angels?
You know what? Well, I'm stopping you because I like the Blood Angels at least 87.2% more than you like the Blood Angels.
No, it's 87.2 times more than I do. let me help you out on this. Like, they're fine. I'll
be playing Blood Angels, and I have to go back in time because this can't, I'll already have been there. But I'm going to play the Blood Angels for 3 tournaments in a row.
Yeah. I don't have an issue with Blood Angels. They're just Space Marines, and I don't overly... I think, candidly, the irony of this game is a game written about Space Marines, and I find the Space Marines to be the least interesting part of the lore.
I don't even know if you like any of the Space Marines, really.
Death Watch I'm okay with. Wolves are fine. I don't dislike them. I just think the lore around non-Space Marines
I think that this is one of the Legions that I like their stories quite a bit. You can never go wrong. Decimation of Ball and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But their heroes are real heroes. They're not as awesome as Space
I think
heroes.
I'm trying to think through. I think the Blood Angels may be the most lore prevalent of all the chapters.
They're in the main, they've been in the main story. The only people that Ultramarines always are.
Are they though? I mean, the reason I ask this is like, so I'm looking at it more from a story and lore standpoint. Okay. The Ultramarines are a figure within the lore, but they don't interact with it as much as the Blood Angels do. The Blood Angels were, I mean, especially the Heresy.
I mean, the Ultramarines are the poster child. Blood Angels are in a lot of the moving parts stories.
That's what I'm getting. The Ultramarines are like the bog standard Space Marine becomes the Ultramarines thing. But when we're talking about a story with epic conflict and all these things, I think the Blood Angels are the biggest ones in there.
Maybe even recently, because 8th really was.
Yeah, Blood Angels really, they really did them up. So anyway, who the Blood Angels are, they're a heavy melee-focused army that mostly excels in close combat and kind of fast attacks, which is just, they like jump packs. If you like jump packs and power fists, you like Blood Angels.
You're going to like Blood Angels.
Yes. They used to like melted pistols, but GW took that away from them.
That army was awesome.
That army was, wow.
that army was wow.
It was just like, so all of you
when
have-
I apologize to people.
Yeah, all of you have pistols that can melt a tank. Yeah.
Full rerolls.
With full rerolls. Anyway, like most of the Space Marine Legions, they're an homage to some sort of mythology, like Vikings, Mongols, pirates, whatever. The Blood Angels are kind of an homage to the story of Catholicism, not in a religious sense.
No, it's the Catholicism mythos, the good versus evil, the angels and demons, and taking these epic stands against them. And also what can happen in corruption, how you have to fight against it. Because they have... a lot of their heroes are effectively what would be the saints and things of that nature.
Epic. Yeah. I mean, the plagiarism is not subtle.
It's not even. I mean, there is a guy that died for your sins. So
yeah, I mean, it's not subtle. So, you know, let's get into this. Before we begin, kind of once again, I'm going to talk about the birth of the Space Marines. For those who didn't listen to those casts, just a real quick hit. At the onset of what was known as the Great Crusade, which is when the Emperor of Mankind left Earth to go conquer the galaxy, he did so with a massive force of super soldiers. They were faster, stronger, tougher, and more resilient, except the poison, than any human in history. The Space Marines were purpose-built to be able to handle anything the galaxy could throw out at them, with the exception of poison.
They are a snarf.
Candidly. All right. The thing about Space Marines, though, is that they weren't a monolith. The force was made up of 20 legions. 2 of them never got very far. And each of them had small quirks and changes within them. This was both by... Actually, it's hard to tell if this was by design or by accident.
I think it's both, to be honest with you.
Probably.
Because part of it, and they haven't really retconned themselves, but they just leave it out there. And I like the way that they leave it out
there. Yeah, it's fine, yeah.
For just, it's in the dark age of you don't really know, you know, what happened. We don't have that history. But part of it was they got corrupted by chaos, the Primarchs themselves. You know, they got messed with.
There was a chaos touch. And so, yeah, let's talk about the Primarchs. So every Space Marine is created by putting in what's called a gene seed, which is complicated, and listen to that cast if you really want to get a lot more into it. But effectively, every single person within a Space Marine army has a piece of the Primarch in them. And the Primarchs was a secret project that the Emperor made where he takes the power of the warp and creates a living being with it. The Primarchs are not more, they're not true mortal beings, as we learned from Korvax. You know, it's like they are actual warp entities, and no one realized that, including me, until I read that.
Well, they're also pieces of him.
Some of him was put into it, but they are at their core this. And so as he made these, the problem is that the Emperor got the tactic to make these from the Chaos Gods. And anyone who has any concept of how a story should be written, a Chaos God will never give you a full truth in a deal. There's always a little bit left off.
And for once, I'll back the Chaos Gods, because the Emperor went, I will for sure do some stuff for you if you give me this knowledge. And they gave him the knowledge and he went, yeah, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, I'm out. I lied. Bye, psych.
Like, I mean,
yeah.
Did you not see this coming? Yeah,
the Emperor basically yelled psych while running out of the room.
And he Krieger smoke bombed it. Yeah. Smoke bomb.
Smoke bomb.
Just ran away. Just like, oh, man.
And because of that, every single legion, this is what we were just discussing a short minute ago, got touched by chaos in one way or another. And this was the Chaos God's way of undermining the Emperor's attempt to screw them over by screwing him over first.
Well, they did it in the hacker backdoor kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They put in a small flaw in all of the Primarchs with kind of a lure, which is how they ended up,
creating the heresy, yeah.
Well, they created the heresy, but also they got scattered by, there's also someone that really made it that work. So, yeah. Sorry, Mom, you weren't very helpful with that one.
So let's dive into the origins of the Blood Angels, at which point they were known as the Ninth Legion. The Ninth Legion, they're interesting because most of the Space Marines' history begins during the Great Crusade. However, the Ninth Legion actually begins earlier than that. They actually first appear in the tail end of the Unification Wars, which is where the Emperor was bringing Terra to heel under his power. However, the Blood Angels weren't deployed with the main forces on Terra that were fighting, like, the Thunder Warriors then. Instead, they were deployed really in a weird method just to create pain and suffering.
This was not the high point of Blood Angels lore.
Well, this is I like this because this is the Blood Angels before the arrival of their Primarch. It's a copy of the Dark Angels, where before they were given this paragon of kindness, they were a monstrosity.
They did this on purpose because he, again, did completely absolve them of their sins.
And these sins were rough. I mean, the way the Emperor used the Ninth Legion, it says, while
he didn't have them win any real victories, they just picked on people.
Well, yeah. So the idea was that the Thunder Warriors, some of the other proto Marines were fighting people on fronts and really engaging in pretty rough battle. The Ninth Legion would attack from behind the lines or off to the edges, where it wasn't even, not even attacking like forces, it's just attacking like civilian populations. And they just massacre them. The Ninth Legion held, this was evil stuff. But what was really crazy about this is that while they were doing this, they became known as the Eaters of the Dead. And this is because that's what they did. The Ninth Legion would run through or largely civilian populations and then actually consume some of their bodies in like a ritual. And not like in a like, oh, it's a rumor. No, they had like 4K, 8K photos of this.
They had remembrancers before there was remembrancers.
Yeah, exactly. Like everyone was writing this down. And the Emperor was, by the way, totally fine with this. And interestingly enough, at the end of the Unification Wars, after he murders off all the Thunder Warriors, Ninth Legion was fine. So that's kind of like, that's where they started. What I find interesting about the Ninth Legion is that this continued. Coming out of under the Great Crusade, the Ninth Legion were used to really to fight, ravage, and annihilate any foe who dared stand against the Emperor.
It was also in the beginning because he was making it. I really feel the Emperor, who is not a nice guy, was sending a message of don't resist, join the cause.
Yeah.
Or
What I find funny about this, though, is they, again, all these things are written independently, but you read about it, and the Blood Angels were deployed against the most dangerous, into the most dangerous war zones, against the strongest foes.
18 times.
Yeah, to really devastate and put, instill fear in them. As opposed to the World Eaters, the Space Wolves, the Dark Angels, the Night Lords, Emperor's Children, etc., Death Guard. Every single Legion has this story, by the way. So it's more of a funny thing, and it's because it's not GW's fault, is that you have to write 18 Legions. You really can't write 18 different ways you wage war. There's not that many variants.
And also, you're probably going to sow terror and holy shit when, again, the giant mutated super soldiers show up in power armor.
Maybe that's what one of the redacted legions were doing. They were coming up planting trees. It was just like that's why he's like, oh, this just doesn't work. He sent one out that was just all kindness. They'd show up with gift baskets. Like,
they're singing the Barney song. Yeah.
Would you guys please join the Imperium? It'd be great to have you.
This is
you
not know. Working at all.
Exactly. Like, all right. They're all redacted. Send in the Dark
Angels.
Think
about the beginning of the Crusade, though. And this is just how terrifying Marines are. If it's just John and Brad and these guys show up, you have to think, what the hell is even happening right now?
Yeah. It's like, why are there people this much larger? It must have been disappointing when you lose to them and you realize that it's actually, they're just one small portion of it. Then all the regular dudes show up and like, oh, I could have beat them.
I could have beat the other. I could have beat Ted.
Good God. What I find one of the most interesting pieces about the Ninth Legion is where they came from. We discussed this before, but the Emperor knew what each Legion was going to specialize in, and he made sure he pulled from Terra a stock that lined up with that. So the Night Lords were made up primarily of criminals. The Iron Hands came from the Tech Wastelands. The World Eaters came from somewhere just terrible. Awful. Just all terrible, et cetera, et cetera. But the Blood Angels had a really unique one because they hailed from the dredges of Terra. Most of the Blood Angels actually came from remnants of people conquered by the Emperor, unwillingly conquered.
Almost like the meek will inherit the earth.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. This one's more just, it's just messed up because these are made up of people whose entire families were slaughtered by the Emperor and his legions and agreed to join. This also messes with the gene seed a little bit because these are also people, and we'll cover this more later, who probably took the brunt of some pretty rough chemical and nuclear weapons. And we'll cover that shortly.
To be fair, I do think that several of the chapters had problems with that because just like we talked about with the Necrontyr, I think a lot of their DNA was flawed.
Yeah, and you see the truth is
Terra was partly a radiated wasteland.
Yeah, it's in almost every legion, I think, except maybe the Ultramarines and who knows, maybe White Scars, I don't care about them. Getting replaced all their Terrans at some fairly early stage in the fight. Most of the Terrans died off early and they became wherever the recruiting world was.
And then we've talked about this in several of our other casts. When we talk about some of the other chapters, that they made it a point to whatever the Primarch's homeworld, they replaced everybody with those
people. Which is always funny because these people from Terra don't live that long anyway, but they would still be like, yeah, I know they're all going to be dead in like 30 years, but how about we just send them into the Ragdan first?
Yeah.
Are we giving them armor?
What about the rest of you? We'll be there in a minute. Yeah,
10 minutes. I'll be there in 10 minutes.
You should be good.
You guys got this. All right. So, one thing we've not really talked about at all before was that during the Dark Age of Technology, all of the worlds that were colonized by mankind during the Golden Age fell. And we usually refer to this as like, oh, well, the Emperor got to another galaxy and encountered this. Yes and no. Some of them were actually in Sol. In fact, the Emperor had to, when he came, actually all of them were, when the Emperor came out of Terra, he had to reconquer his own galaxy. We discussed, you know, Mars was pretty easy. They made a deal where he pretended to be the Omnissiah. But all the rest of them involved a rather aggressive approach, some easier than others. One of the hardest, I'm mad at you, GW, one of the hardest was Neptune. It could have been Uranus. And they could have said the hardest fight in the entire galaxy was the fight for Uranus. And they could have written that down and everyone would have enjoyed it. But no, they went with Neptune. It's lame. It's lame, GW. Straight up lame. It's a that's a golden joke, and you and everyone and no one would have not appreciated it. So let's talk about Neptune, because this was a big turning point for the Ninth Legion.
This place is awful.
That's why Neptune's human inhabitants, no one knows what happened, but they were massively mutated, like, you know, 28 days later, zombie style.
Okay. Like it's all the things that run at you in Doom.
Yes. This is it. So the Emperor sends the Ninth Legion to pacify the planet, which means kill every single thing there. The problem is, and he did this, by the way, to every single planet that was there. Neptune was unique, though, because these mutants on Neptune had actually built a massive underground network of tunnels that connected the fortresses together, which were so deep and fortified that they were impervious to orbital guns.
Also, a big thing on this, the Emperor, especially the planets and Sol, was a big no-no. We're taking these back.
Yeah, we're not cracking this in half. He could have blown Neptune up. So the Ninth Legion had to go in basically by hand. And good thing for them, they were of the Legions. I mean, it depends. All right, let me say this now. If you're reading a Blood Angels book, then the Ninth Legion was the most adept at close combat fighting. If you're reading a World Eaters book, it's them. If you're reading a Space Wolves book, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, the Ninth Legion descend on full force on the mutants on Neptune. And the surface is pretty easy. They mop the surface pretty quick. But when they go down into the subterranean, this got ugly. So ugly that actually at one point, the Ninth Legion went dark. The Emperor all stopped hearing from them completely. Fearing the worst, the Emperor sent over and diverted forces to go and either find his lost legion. And just as they're arriving, you know, in orbit, they get the message back up that, hey, we did it. All done. And all the mutants are dead.
But they lost. Wow.
Probably, yeah. I mean, they said they lost about 12,000 of their own. At this stage, that's probably over 10% of the Legion dies. And, you know, no words, by the way, are ever said of what happened down there. Just that they went dark for a little bit, and then they came out of it. And we're going to cover the Black Rage later, but that's my opinion of what happened on Neptune is they took these catastrophic losses that triggered the Black Rage, which is why they stopped communicating, because when a Blood Angel's under the Black Rage, they're not in a big tucky-tucky.
Yeah, mode. They're not writing anything down in their journal.
Yeah. But anyway, what's becomes fascinating to me about this is this battle ends and the Blood Angels need to refill their legion because they've just lost like 10% of it. They actually turn to the people of Neptune, just like the Emperor had done on Terra with them, and begin recruiting. Yeah. So apparently there were still some people on Neptune who weren't super mutants. It's not clear.
Doesn't get cleared at all in the stories. Just they went, hey, we had to fight this planet of mutants. And then we replenished our ranks, and they kind of let that go. You're like, from the place with the mutants?
Yeah, so were there just some random people you found in there who were like, yeah, we've been hiding here for 10,000 years. Glad you guys are here. We're not mutants, or they did do the mutants. Anyway, it's not clear.
Yeah, at all.
Yeah, Brett alluded to earlier the story arc of the Blood Angels. At this point, we're getting past Neptune, and the Ninth Legion are just horrifically violent. They were horrifically violent on Terra. They were horrifically violent on Neptune. And as they go out into the galaxy, them and World Eaters start becoming almost an issue with the level of violence that they're using.
Well, it becomes a big deal because of the fact, one, it's obviously it's wrong and this and that, but it's also a big deal because they become known for this. You can't sell your great crusade, your unification of the fact that the Emperor is creating his whole thing. I'm conquering the galaxy to make a better place. You can't say I'm making a better place when the crazies are here.
Well, the problem is the crazies also weren't that selective of who they attack. So we'll talk about Kyburan, K-I-Y-B-U-R-A-N. So if I pronounce that Kai Buron. So this was, again, always a fun one. It's an irradiated world full of cannibal mutants ruled over by a techno-barbarian. So and it's an 80s movie. This is
on VHS for sure.
Yeah, this is an 80s made-for-TV movie that Brad watched his little chin awesome. Going, this is so good. I want to watch this again. Anyway, so they send the Imperial Army over, which is Imperial Guard and Navy, and they land on the planet, and they just get slaughtered by these mutants. So the Emperor says, cool, Ninth Legion time, and they send these over. Again, just like on Neptune, they run into a pretty big problem because the techno-barbarian who's ruling the planet has what appears to be an infinite number of mutants. And so the Ninth Legion start with early success, but just get overwhelmed because it is a 300-to-1 ratio.
Yeah, there's a never-ending horde of these
enemies. Yeah, being a super soldier is adorable. It's not just not going to hold up when you have to kill 50 people with each swing of a chainsaw.
In the story, they talk about the fact that these guys do not care if they take damage. So
you have to kill them.
Full speed.
Yeah.
They do not care if you could chop off their arms. They're just like,
they don't retreat.
Merely a flesh wound.
So the Ninth Legion does something that no Space Marine Legion likes to do. They retreat. And they move back, and they move over to what they call strategic engagements, which means a Ninth Legion would do a lightning strike on one section of the mutant army, kill as many as they possibly can, and then bail out. And they do this for a decade, which I need to also point out, GW timetables here get really goofy.
This makes no sense because none of the engagement takes that long for anybody else.
Yeah, this one takes a decade. Whatever. It just says it. And I was like, all right. What ends up happening, the reason this story is more important is that during this decade-long battle, I have no idea why, they got completely isolated from the Imperium and couldn't resupply. Don't know why, because the mutants, it's just on a planet, but we'll skip that. And during this element, the apothecaries of the Ninth Legion tell them, hey, our opponents eat the dead. We should do that too, so we don't starve to death. That's just what they did.
We do have an entire successor chapter called Flesh Eaters, but continue.
Yeah, also the Blood Drinkers, and there's about six of them. they're terrible names. So as the story goes, guys, this is lame. As the story goes, the Ninth Legion's able to refill their energy by eating all these mutants, and they can keep the pressure on Kai Buron. At the same time, though, it also cements their reputation as Angels of Death, because just like on Neptune, there were some random humans on this planet who were just hanging out. And
also, how were they doing?
Yeah, and they had their iPhone cameras available, so they filmed, these massive humans killing the monsters, then eating them.
They were killing monsters. They were killing other people.
They also would raid these random villages of humans at night and kill and eat some of them too. So it's interesting. At this stage, the Ninth Legions, I would argue, worse than the Night Lords.
Oh, these guys are terrible.
Yeah.
They're a little heavy-handed on the incorruptible sins of the Ninth Legion at this time is just
pure evil.
Pure evil.
Yeah. And what ends up happening because this is Kai Buron's one example, this happens over and over and over again. And it's not surprising that the Legion made up of criminals and mutants maybe doesn't behave as well as some of the other ones. But over time, this cannibalism and this horror begins to affect the other Legions to the point where a lot of the other Legions didn't want to be anywhere near them. Like they would either refuse to take part in engagement with the Ninth Legion was present, or if the Ninth Legion was present, they would actually just basically pull back. I mean, Rogel Dorn, for example, watched members of the Ninth Legion kill and eat prisoners. There was a fortification they were trying to get through, and the Ninth Legion pulled out a bunch of people they captured, murdered them, and ate them in front of the opposition. And Rogel Dorn had to have a little chat with the Ninth Legion about, like, I will murder all of you.
And if they don't find Sanguinius at this point in time, I think that the Ninth Legion, not even the Blood Angels this time, just the Ninth Legion. Yeah,
we would have had 17 Legions.
Right.
Yeah,
it gets sent out to pasture.
Yeah,
for sure.
We're done. So luckily for them, there's a Primarch sighting. So let's talk about their Primarch Sanguinius. Like everybody else, Sanguinius was, you know, teleported out of his gestation pod and thrown onto some planet to tempt him for chaos. And he didn't even land on a planet. He landed on a moon, Ball 2, which is called Ball Secundus. Ball Secundus. I should have just called it Ball 2 through the whole thing. But I'll be nice to the Blood Angels fans and not just ruin them. It's not Ball 2. It is Ball 2. Anyway, Ball sits in it. It's a ball the system because there's Ball 1 and Ball 2. So Ball Primus and Ball Secundus. They all sit in the Ultima Segmentum, which is the right side of the galaxy. It's just where all the trash fires are.
It's where everything is going down.
The Tau, I mean, this is before the Tau. This is before the Tyranids, but both of them started over there. The orcs are already over there. And we discover later there's a ton of Necron Tomb Worlds over there as well. So Ball was a system that was colonized during the Golden Age of Technology. However, the humans that settled it were not the first inhabitants. We don't know anything about them. We just know that there was a Xeno race who was long died out before the humans ever got there. So for whatever reason, the humans were able to read their relics and adopted this religion of the Xenos who'd been there. And their religion was the belief that there were two angels that existed who were fighting for control of the Immaterium. And I don't really know if like the Xenos, if there were two worships, like one were on team good and one were on team bad, or if they were just worshiping the struggle of them. I'm assuming it's a second, but they never make it clear.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Anyway, the people of Baal over time fully adopt this. This becomes their religion, and it sits all the way through the Dark Age of Technology, which did not go well for Baal.
You are correct, sir.
Just didn't go great. So Baal was a planet and two moons at the start of the Dark Age of Technology. At the end of the Dark Age of Technology, the planet was Mars. In fact, it was just complete, absolute wasteland. One of the moons was basically an irradiated wasteland. And the second one was also an irradiated wasteland, but still had a few settlers on it. In other words, the people at GW saw Mad Max, not even beyond Thunderdome. I'm talking Mad Max and maybe a little bit of Road Warrior, and went, yep, we're writing that for a planet.
Yep.
Without the cars. So the people of Ball Secundus, which is whatever it is, are a nomadic people that are trying to survive by finding things in the wasteland, while at the same time avoiding massive chunks of radiation, horrifying storms, and the funnest part, mutants. Because there's all...
This is Fallout.
Also. You're right. It's also is Fallout. Yeah. But it's well before Fallout.
Yeah.
As a theme, it's amongst all the planets of Chaos Gods and the Primarchs, they pick one that will tempt them to chaos. So Magnus and Lorgar were sent somewhere with power and knowledge. Mortarion and Kurz sent to just torture and pain. Everyone went to conflict and strife. Maybe a couple didn't, but anyway. Ball is no different.
But
it's Sanguinius. So Sanguinius is a baby.
Shout out to Zoobs. He hates Sanguinius so much.
Does he really? Yeah, I'm with him on this one.
He's bananas. I mean, I have to admit, he is ridiculously OP because his stats are maxed in yes.
Yeah, I mean, Sanguinius is a wild character. So Sanguinius is found as a baby. A nomadic tribe finds it. But when they kind of go to pick him up, they discover he has giant wings on his back.
I mean, angel wings.
Yeah, angel wings. It's white feathers, not, you know, bat wings, which is what Conrad would have had. So they assume he's a mutant, and they're about to murder him when they decide to not do that and instead adopt him. I'll be honest, given the power we were talking about of Sanguinius, I think if they'd tried to stab him, he would have just, the infant Sanguinius would have murdered all of them. He would have
psionically blasted
them. Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't have worked. So it's kind of like, oh, they chose not to kill him. It's entirely possible.
I love the fact that they don't even make a big deal about the fact that his psychic abilities because he's the everything else is so OP. You're like, oh yeah, he's also got that.
I actually kind of wonder if they came upon this baby like surrounded by a bunch of other dead nomads, because the first group did try to kill him. It's just like it's a monster. They're all dead. Next one goes, yeah, let's give it a chance. So anyway, cool thing on Sanguinius, he's the only one I'm aware of, and correct me if I'm wrong in the Discord, where they do discuss how fast he ages.
Night Hunter had that too, because he landed and got discarded and started hunting immediately as a child.
Okay, so you have two of them. Because yeah, the Sanguinius, it's with detail, it says at 3 months old, Sanguinius was a like full-sized child who was walking around, and within a year, he was as tall as a man and just and speaking like a normal adult. So within the 2 years, he was a full-sized Primarch, which is probably for a group of people living in an irradiated wasteland. He's a four-time multiple to everyone around him, it would be my guess, with giant wings.
Angel wings.
Oh, that don't do
it. He also has random flowing hair. He's a rock star with angel wings.
Well, okay, this game was written in the late 80s.
I'm just 90s. Saying.
Everyone had flowing Fabio. Hair. Yeah, well, everyone in the early 90s had flowing hair except for you.
I had.
You tried. What I'm saying is
I did then.
You straightened into the straightener?
Oh, no. I Rockstar curlied it up.
You did?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Your mom and sister helping you with like proper. They were. If you guys don't know this, anyone you know who's over 50 and is an American or British, you can mess with them on this one. Because if they had sisters, they usually had their sisters help them with their hair care routine. Am I correct?
I'm not saying anything about this.
Yeah, there we go.
Just saying my mom and I had the same hair for a while.
Oh, God. It's all right. It's okay. If you were in your 60s, I could buy a push on. So how many perms have you had?
Didn't need them. Straight curly, straight baby. Curly. Oh, God.
All right.
And then I was bald.
Yeah. And then, oh. Yeah.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So some of the fun parts about Sanguinius's powers is he's just so overpowered. I mean, it's
he's bananas.
So the moon's so the ball two, I'm doing that by the way now, is massively irradiated in areas. And Sanguinius would just walk into those areas, grab the gear if one wanted to walk out. My favorite one, he would break rocks with his bare hands. I don't know when that would come up, but apparently he's out there just going, yelling judo chop and breaking and breaking boulders. Also, my favorite one, he could fell a wild beast with just a look. That was written down somewhere. You know what is never written down anywhere? What these wild beasts are.
Also, it has to be a bummer. Again, he's a powerful psychic.
Yeah.
And they barely make reference to it.
But they literally
reference him dropping people with his psychic powers.
But he's like, I had to read this note. He fells wild beasts. The only animal they ever refer to on Ball is the giant rats or fire scorpion. Anyway, he's just
murdering squirrels like a madman.
The whole time that I'm reading this, by the way, the I'm a lumberjack and it's okay was playing in my head. You know, like
a lumberjack. Yeah. It's okay.
On Wednesday, Sanguinius goes shopping as buttered scones for tea. he also could fly. Plus just started. Not with his wings, with his psychic powers, which just total side note, if none of you have seen Pete Holmes playing Professor Xavier,
firing all the X-Men,
but especially firing Angel, watch that, look at Sanguinius, get a good kick.
Freaking bird!
Yeah, freaking bird. You want some seeds?
So the wings are 100%. I just wanted to look cool.
Yeah, his wings are pure aesthetic. An important piece, though, because this matters to his legion, he did suffer from the Black Rage, though. And the story on that's important. So one day he and his tribe of merry men are wandering around and they get surprised by a bunch of feral mutants who attack. Sanguinius, fearing that his family effectively are about to get killed, just blows into this rage and killed over 100 of them in like an instant. And they don't say how. It may have also been psychic. I mean, we don't know how he killed them. He just wrecks them.
Well, he has huge remorse on all these things because also Sanguinius is probably the most compassionate of all of the Primarchs.
Not saying much.
True. True story.
So I'm just going to be honest. He's the most compassionate of the murder machines.
He's an amazing speaker. You know, he's eloquent. He also is known for thinking through things before they get done.
In comparison.
Yes, but I'm just saying, like, even when we'll talk about it in a moment, when he leads his legion and just the way he takes care of.
And so over time, like all the Primarchs, Sanguinius becomes the leader of the entire planet, or in this case, Moon. He exterminates all the mutants.
Okay, most everybody, we won't throw shade on some of them. Almost every Primarch dominated his planet.
Yeah.
This goes next level, dude. Come on.
Versus the lion, it's the same story.
The lion was
the same story.
The ruler and the lord. Sanguinius is a minor deity now.
Yeah, so was the lion. I mean, not to Luther, but to everyone but Luther.
Hibbs was more of the Camelot, though. He had the circle of, you know, we're all equals, and then he just gave the wink. We're all equals.
We're totally equal. Yes, I'm three of all of you, but we're equal.
We're equal. Yeah. You guys know that if you banded together, I wouldn't care, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, you guys, I also could take all of you in a fight and replace all of you tomorrow.
Right now.
Yeah, it wouldn't even matter. And no one.
He gets the nutless monkey.
Exactly. <yeah. laughs> So, one interesting thing about Sanguinius is when the emperor arrived, there's really not any story around it because Sanguinius also was a precog and knew this was going to happen.
It's not only he's a precog, but all he needs is a moment with the emperor because they effectively have the psychic mind meld where they communicate and they say that they give the thing where in just a look, they knew their past.
Yep.
They knew what was going on and he immediately signs on.
Yeah. Although what's an interesting flip, though, on that, as much as that went that way, Sanguinius doesn't take over his legion right away. Instead, he meets his legion and he then says, I'll be back. And he leaves. And he leaves to go study under Horus. Because at this point, because Horus was the first Primarch found, correct? The first one?
No. But the order that they are is the order that they got found out of.
Okay.
Horus was just the best at it.
Horus was just the best at it. Okay. That's what I thought.
I mean, Horus is because he did the whole Horus Heresy, Civil War, and everything's on it. Horus is the best at everything. Sanguinius is the most OP, compassionate, everything. You know,
they all have their purpose. Jagged Icon exists. So the interesting thing about the Horus one is that him and Horus bond really heavily. Like, to the point, they become basically best friends.
That's also. Horus is every Primarch has a superpower.
Yeah,
Horus is his charisma, and he can make
anybody. But Horus liked him back.
True, yeah, but I'm just saying. A lot of times, you're not real sure if you are best friends.
That's
or
a good point.
He made you be best friends.
In this one, when I say it's Horus, openly later admits like Sanguinius was one of his best friends.
Correct.
Fun story is Sanguinius also became really close with Abaddon. At the same period of time.
By the way, so crazy because Abaddon's such a douche at the time.
Yeah, but Sanguinius was just... But Sanguinius was impressed with Abaddon on the battlefield.
Oh, he's awesome. He's also, even then, he's an amazing leader. If you want someone to get something done, Don is...
It's just done. So let's then jump into actually Sanguinius at that point comes back to his legion and takes control. And he is a just true paragon for the Ninth Legion. We said this before, every space marine has a genetic imprint that makes them loyal to follow their Primarch. But I'll be honest with Sanguinius, I don't think they needed it. His charisma was insane.
Read his book.
Yeah.
His book, he gives the greatest pep talk speech.
Yeah.
And he just shows up and he tells them, I refuse to be your leader until you think I'm worthy of being your leader.
And he also randomly memorizes all of their names. And there's like 100,000 of these. So
he goes and individually meets people.
Yeah.
He's insanity, the good
guy. Which, by the way, how long that would take?
Yes.
Like, I just want to put, like, it's like, you know, 100,000 seconds is a lot of time.
It's
like,
a lot of seconds.
If it's 1 second per. So I'm just pointing out, like, anyway, it's not important. The other thing, though, that's interesting is that the blood rage that had been building throughout the Legion went away.
Once Sanguinius shows up, yeah.
Just, yeah, all the cannibalism, all that stuff just disappeared.
Because Space Jesus took away your sins. Mm-hmm. He effectively takes it upon himself. Now, this is a big thing, and they say this in the novel itself. He does suffer a bunch because he gets a psychic, effectively, backlash from all this, the things that they've done and everything else. So Sanguinius goes through the trials to basically get his legion back.
Sure.
He's a pretty bad dude, man.
The books are good.
I know. I get why people don't. He is a huge Mary Sue because he's so, you know, there's Horus who's here, but like besides Horus, he is so bananas OP.
Yeah, there's a lot of writing around him. But anyway, post Sanguinius joining the Ninth Legion, now they are the Blood Angels. And this is where the tactics change, everything changes, and they come much more aligned with what modern Blood Angels are. They're still uber violent in combat, but not, they've moved away from the called World Leaders, Night Lords era to actually being precision. When they lightning strike, they hit with a force of a hammer, but with the care of a scalpel. So they're no longer just ripping through anything and everyone who's even remotely near the target. They're actually winning engagements. They're able to follow a battle plan and other people can take part of them. From a lore standpoint, though, one of the most important pieces, and it'll come up later, is Sanguinius was viewed as the most like loyal or trustworthy of all of them. So he was very close friends with Horus, Leman, and Jagatai. He was closest with Horus, actually. But that was just his friendship. Gilliman refers to Sanguinius of one of only four Primarchs he trusted. The Lion spoke openly, constantly about how much how fond he was of Sanguinius because he viewed him as an equal when it came to like nobility and honor.
Sanguinius always does the right thing.
Even Angron liked him mostly because Sanguinius could beat people up pretty good. I don't think Lorgar liked him. I'm going to throw that one out there. I don't think Lorgar liked Sanguinius.
He was really just jealous.
Well, this is like,
that is wildly 100% because Lorgar wanted to worship the emperor, and the emperor's favorite pretty much was Sanguinius.
Or Horus. Yeah,
it's Sanguinius.
Whereas, you know who was not his favorite? Lorgar.
Lorgar.
Or Jagatai.
He was out of the 18 Primarchs, he was 17th, 18th, 22nd.
So let's dive into, you know, the Blood Angels and the Heresy. So before the official outbreak of the Heresy, Horus and his other like plotters sat down to make their plan. And one of the most important pieces of the plan was who they could turn and who they couldn't. And Horus immediately says, someone has to kill Sanguinius.
Also, he said, not only do we have to kill them, we have to get rid of him because him, and while he's alive, his legion will never turn.
Exactly. So what's interesting about this, though, is at this stage, there's a keeper of secrets named Kyrus, who's, you know, part of their little, you know, I don't know, pack of conspirators. And Kyrus is an interesting, because he's a keeper of secrets. Kyrus is in it for himself, or herself, actually, or whatever, itself, let's call it that way. Kyrus first taunts Horus, claiming that Horus only wants to kill Sanguinius because he's afraid that if Sanguinius were to turn to chaos, the chaos gods would actually honor Sanguinius more than Horus because Sanguinius is more powerful than him. Horus literally just ignores him, by the way, and moves on with his day. But Horus knows something. Years earlier, Horus had walked in on Sanguinius killing a blood angel, and he doing it because this blood angel had succumbed to the red thirst and was consuming a random person. And so Sanguinius killed him because he had to, and told Horus at this point about the flaw in their gene seed. Horus never told anybody, but obviously this was knowledge for him. And then at the time of the heresy, he uses it to his advantage. So Horus tells Sanguinius there's a Xeno incursion on effectively the other side of the galaxy from Sol.
weird that the Dark Angel Space Wolves and Blood Angels all got sent to Guam.
Yeah. The last exit on the left. Go there.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Don't worry. You didn't miss it. Keep driving.
But what he tells him is not only are these Xenos killing Imperial citizens, but they have highly technologically advanced. And he tells Sanguinius, their technology could help you cure the red thirst. And Sanguinius just believes this for no good reason, but it's fine.
Well, one of the few flaws that big old Sanguinius had is he is known to be wildly trusting of his brothers.
Yeah.
Like this, it doesn't even occur to him for a while that any of this could ever even happen.
Well, I mean, it occurs to him pretty quickly when he gets there.
I'm saying before, because they had...
Because let's just say Sanguinius gets caught up in the plan pretty quick.
Because he does make basically excuses for every one of his brothers at some point in time.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Every time someone is rightfully about to kill one of the Primarchs for being a jackass, Sanguinius is like, hold up, let's not do it right now. Right. Like, cough, cough, Angron over and over and over
again. Exactly. Yeah, that's true.
Like multiple times. He does save him
a lot.
He saved Angron. And everyone, like, you're looking back, are like, way to go, jackass. Anyway, as soon as the Blandals arrive in this system, this massive warp storm just
envelops
the entire, like they are blind to anything but the system. But they're space marines and they're automatons. So they're like, well, we're still here to do something. And they just go down to the planet to go do that thing. But the problem with that planet is it's not Xenos incursions. It's demons. And they bombard them from space.
Does nothing.
So they do plan B, which is grab Chainsword and go down there. And as they're fighting on the planet, there's really nothing. They're not really doing anything of value. They're killing endless demons and new ones are spawning. That the Keeper of Secrets, Kyrus, who is also here, reaches out to Sanguinius directly and challenging Sanguinius to come and fight. Effectively, by the way, telling Sanguinius all the truth at this moment in time of like, you know, we're betraying you, come, you know. And
well, he's trying to
bait him into coming.
Well, he's also trying to demoralize him because he tells, you know, your brothers are leaving you.
No one wants you. The Imperium's going to fail because of you. And so Sanguinius gets pissed off, grabs a bunch of his buddies, and then goes to attack Kyrus. As soon as he lands, a very important figure. You mean
when he lands on the X?
The giant X in the ground, yeah.
Yeah. It's clearly a trap.
He lands, and a massive bloodthirster comes out of the ground named Kabanda. Because the truth is, Khorne wanted Sanguinius.
Badly.
Very badly. And so it's actually, I'm not even sure if Kabanda and Kyrus were in cahoots together. It almost feels like in the story that Kyrus was trying to tempt Sanguinius in the way a Keeper of Secrets would tempt them. And as soon as Sanguinius landed, Khorne sent his best bloodthirster, Kabanda, to go and just beat Sanguinius into joining Khorne. And that's kind of what happens. Kabanda kind of beats up Sanguinius. Sanguinius stabs him, and Kabanda uses a whip.
Well, there's more to it than that because he gets he gets distracted. You know, there's a bunch of stuff going on. Come on,
there's stuff going on that's more important than the bloodthirster in front of you.
Boo!
Just pointing it out. Anyway,
read the book.
I know. So Kabanda uses his whip and knocks Sanguinius to the ground, crushing his legs. That's a thing.
After Sanguinius had ran him through with his sword.
Yeah, it didn't work, did it? Anyway, as soon as Sanguinius lands on the ground, Kabanda then runs off in the other direction and kills 500 space marines instant.
Well, once he has Sanguinius on the ground, he effectively just tells him, watch me.
Yeah, and goes off and kills all these guys. The death of all these, you know, his children effectively overwhelms Sanguinius's brain, and the psychic trauma knocks him unconscious. So he does that like movie like faint where he like wipes his forehead and passes out. As soon as he does that, this triggers something in his legion, and that something is the Black Rage.
Well, it is pretty good though, because
So the entirety of the Blood Angel Legion that's there begin to lash out and attack anything that's not a Blood Angel. Fun story on that. There were space wolves here. Past tense. There were also humans here. Past tense. They all get slaughtered. The good news is they do successfully kill, you know, almost every demon. While this is happening, a few Blood Angel librarians rush over and use their psychic powers to wake Sanguinius up. Sanguinius wakes up to his entire legion in a blood rage, slaughtering anything around them. And Sanguinius just goes, yeah, Cabanda did that, and goes and beats the ever-living hell.
Oh, he wrecked
this. Yeah, out of Cabanda. I mean, Cabanda, I think, did make the mistake of being like, this guy's not that tough, and then took full bore Sanguinius, banished back into the warp. But the blood rage doesn't stop amongst his legion until every last demon is killed. At that point, Kyrus starts laughing and reaches out to Sanguinius and effectively taunts him by saying, you know, your legion already is chaos. Look at it. And offers him a deal and says, if you, the Primarch, will fully give yourself over to your rage and step through this portal, because it's always a portal, I will cure your
the
legion.
The rest of the legion.
Everyone's cured. And Sanguinius goes, okay, and steps forward into the portal. And as he does it, his apothecary shoves him out of the way. Again, he's half the size, but whatever, and jumps through the portal first. The story is actually pretty cool. The book's called Fear to Tread, so go ahead and read Fear to Tread. This is a whole chat between Sanguinius and the apothecary. But anyway, Sanguinius does not give himself over to chaos. At this same moment, this is enough of an action to kind of reduce the warp storm, where a message comes through, and it's Rogel Dorn, everyone's favorite
because
Primarch.
The power in the real space is on things that are happening, you know,
yeah,
devastation, whatever your feelings are, that is the thing. He quelled enough of that. He calmed his own rage.
Yeah, his rage calms down. He also took out an entire demon incursion.
Also, he didn't fall to the excess and the lure. So all of this reduces the power of chaos in this region, so it does dissipate.
And he gets a message in from Dorn saying, Horus has betrayed us. He has allies. We need you at Terra because they're going to come kill the Emperor. So Sanguinius grabs his entire legion that are still left alive, by the way, because a lot of them are dead, grabs his life and jumps back into Terra. So fun part about this journey back to Terra, there is a incredible warp storm happening, not just where Sanguinius was, but throughout the entire galaxy. They credit Erebus for this, but it's really just the Chaos Gods.
Well, the thing is the warp storms are strategically located to block the greatest champions of the Imperium from getting back to defend.
And we talked about this before. The Astronomicon is a giant lighthouse. But like any lighthouse, the further you get from it, the harder it is to see. And a bigger the storm, you can't see it. So as soon as they get into the ships to triangulate and go back to Terra, the navigators tell Sanguinius, we can't see it. We're not sure.
They're also in the middle of effectively a hurricane.
Yeah. And so they basically pick what they think is the right-ish direction and head that way, hoping to see a light.
They were not right.
Well, no, they were. they were going in the right direction. But meanwhile, while they're going—
Ish,
there is a, they get the glimpse of a light, and they believe this is the Astronomicon. So they turn all the ships and they beeline as fast as they can to this. And as soon as they get close, they translate out of the warp and find themselves not in Sol, but in Ultramar. And luckily, Gilliman and the Lion are waiting for them there, saying, hey, we have to chat. What happened was, we covered this a while ago, the Ultramarines found an old Necron relic in their system. Big fight goes on, blah, blah, blah. They blow the relic up. When they blow the relic up, it creates effectively a supernova within the warp of light. And this is what the Blood Angels were following. Fun story on that. It's also what fan theory is what brought the Tyranids to the galaxy, because it was such a bright flash that it actually extended beyond the Milky Way.
Into dark space.
Yeah, and everything, and things in the dark space saw this and went, that's probably food, and big end that way. So this next bit's kind of funny. Funny because it is important, but a super messed up story. Gilliman has a plan. And his plan is effectively that they don't know if the Emperor is alive or dead.
To be fair, they also see what they consider three of the top five guys or three of the top five legions, and they're not defending Terra. So there's
decent chance that
everybody's, we lost already.
Because they don't know. Remember, the warp storm is so powerful, they can't see the Astronomicon. And so Gilliman has a plan. His plan is effectively, and by the way, it's a good plan because Gilliman always has good plans. I like Gilliman, and I'm right about this. His plan was to form a new Imperium called Imperium Secundus. Not Imperium II, which is what it should have been, but Imperium Secundus. And the plan is basically, we're going to all sit right here. We're going to go to the store. We're going to buy as many boots of Mighty Ass Kicking as they have. We're going to go put on said boots, and then we're going to go beat the crap out of Horus.
Yep.
Effectively, so Imperium Secundus was not meant to replace the Emperor. It was meant to honor the Emperor by beating the ever-living hell out of whoever killed the Emperor.
But this is a hugely detailed plan because it really did make a new Imperium.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was because it wasn't just meant to be a sacrifice. He was going to honor the Emperor by finishing the work he'd started. They were going to go, again, step one, beat the hell out of Horus and his buddies. But step two was going to be continue forming the Imperium and growing it all the way out.
Which is hilarious in this story because, well, you're effectively saying we're going to choose a supreme leader. That never works out bad.
Well, but again, Gilliman, because he's awesome, did this right. Gilliman writes out, we need a new emperor, and immediately says, as the guy writing the plan that calls for a new leader, that leader can't be me. Because whatever that person that's always a dictator.
Well, he gets called out by the line. He's like, so are you going to lead this? And they start arguing. He goes, no, it'll be Sanguinius. Yeah. And the lion immediately goes, well, yeah, of course.
Fair enough. Yeah,
exactly. Never mind. Yeah. You know what? I take that back.
This is a good plan. Anyway, Gilliman didn't argue. Gilliman went, no, of course not going to be. It's going to be Sanguinius. It was like, there's no pause there. It was just, it's that guy. And everyone went,
that's a fair point. He's clearly the best choice.
So I do like this. Technically, the Emperor was not dead, by the way, yet. Sanguinius was now the leader of a coup d'etat.
That's true.
This was a full-blown coup d'etat. But oopsies. And they realized this pretty quickly because we're not getting into it now. The books are really good. They also randomly capture Conrad Kurz during this period of time. And after...
Who, as usual, Conrad accidentally helps the Imperium.
Yeah, but he probably was doing it on purpose. Conrad's a goofy.
Because he talks shit
about
the fact that you're not going to be able to save the Emperor. And they all three go, the Emperor's still alive? Yeah. And go, well, looks like we're leaving right now.
Right. And that's a great part of that story. But Sanguinius was also a precog.
True.
I mean, it's like in the story, like Conrad's, they're like, well, thanks to Conrad, we now know the Emperor is still alive. And Sanguinius goes, oh, yeah, I'm also a precog, and I also could tell he was alive. It's like, well, then why were you here? So Imperium Secundus gets thrown into the garbage, and all three Primarchs take three different routes basically back to Terra.
Like bananas also.
And I'm not going to get into it. There's a book called Ruin Storm, which gives you all the stories of the process of them going from one spot of the galaxy to, well, one of them makes it in time. The others don't.
It's the Blood Angels.
The Blood Angels make it in time.
Spoiler.
Before they go, though, we need to tell a quick story about a really cool model with, I do hate the hair, but anyway, it's called the Sanguinor. This is a rando wild side story.
I meant to say the Holy Spirit, but continue.
Yeah. All right. So as soon as Sanguinius is elected, like I said, in like 2 seconds, all of his, people around him were concerned for his safety because they were worried like a traitor assassin would try to kill him because the truth is he's just a Primarch. He's not the Emperor of Mankind. He is killable.
But also, it's a big deal because they don't have... There was Sanguinius, and then there was a giant Grand Canyon chasm of who would be better in this spot.
Yeah.
You know, so they're like, if this guy isn't here anymore, we are in real trouble.
And so Sanguinius, and literally every chapter master ever, has a retune. What is this word?
You got it right the first time.
It's retinue? Yeah. Okay, it's not retune. Whatever.
It is not retune.
Whatever. That accompany him everywhere. In this case, they were called the Sanguinary Guards. And they're meant to represent both the best warriors and the best strategic thinkers. And their idea here is really dumb. So they all get together, 10 of them. And they draw straws. And of the 10 straws, two of the straws have blood on them. So after they do that, the two guys holding the blood straws, the other eight leave. One of them is chosen. His name is Alatron. And in order to protect Alatron's true identity, they have Alatron kill the other guy.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't know what he's... Like, you could told everyone, hey, that's Alatron.
I love most of the lore.
They have no... This is the kind of thing you do if you're like, well, what if someone got a hold of his family and held his family hostage? His family are the Blood Angels. Like, there's no reason to do this. So anyway, he kills the other dude. But then they also decide to hide his identity even further by taking a massive golden helmet that has curly blonde hair, like perm style.
I didn't have a perm.
You did have a perm, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
Really?
I have wildly curly hair, if I had hair.
So you were born in 72.
71, thank
you. You're born in 71. You're telling me your mom never gave you a perm?
No.
Okay.
My hair's bananas curly.
None of us would ever know. I've never known you with hair.
Yeah, I've had 1 centimeter of hair the entire time you've known
me. I'm not even sure. So has anyone in 40K seen you with long hair?
No.
You would have started playing in late 90s. So you had about 30 when you started playing Warhammer?
Mm-hmm. I was 29 when I started.
Yeah. There you go. So, yeah. Anyway, not important. So anyway, they heat this helmet with a perm on it all the way up until it's white hot and then place it on Alatron's head so it fuses to his skull permanently.
All of this is so bananas.
Yes, yeah. And then this is so that he can be the herald for Sanguinius. But luckily, it's a secret. And also, is he supposed to look like Sanguinius? The thing I never thought about Sanguinius, like, was he supposed to look like Sanguinius?
The Sanguinar story now is cool. The Sanguinar story in the Inception makes no sense.
Yeah. So anyway, fast forward to the Sanguinar story. While the Blood Angels are going back to Terra, they end up stuck on Davin, because of course it's where they would go, which for those who don't remember, that's where Horus was converted to chaos, was on Davin. And they're fighting a greater demon force, blah, blah, blah. Greater demon tries to pull Sanguinius into the Immaterium. And before he can do it, Alatron, who is, you know, the Sanguinar at this moment, rushes in, tackles the demon, and slams it into the Immaterium with it.
He just pulls him into the warp.
Yeah, and as he goes down, Sanguinius looks and watches a Sanguinar convert over from Alatron to...
The Sanguinar.
The Sanguinar.
It's the spirit.
Yeah.
And he shows up. On the game, he shows up all the time. In the lore, the Sanguinar shows up when the Blood Angels need them.
And the Sanguinar, so at this point, the Sanguinar is kind of cool because the Sanguinar converts over to being like, it's just this mythical being that does appear randomly. And to Brad's point, it's either when he's most needed or when they're most deserving. So there was a story I like where 12 Blood Angels were leading a strike on a Night Lord battle barge. So when we say leading strike, I mean there are 12 Blood Angels fighting through a battle barge, which they don't, to be fair, they don't define how large a battle barge is, but it's more than 3 rooms.
Yes. And you might even go with several.
Yeah, full of Night Lord Space Marines. And all of their followers.
And demons.
Yeah, and demons. And this is all because they don't explain why it was a penance, that they're basically either trying to die effectively to show their penance. I don't get the reason. But anyway, the Sanguinar shows up and fights by their side. And they end up fighting the entire way through the ship and killing the commander. Although of the 12, 11 of them die. But still, pretty cool. The next one I like about the Sanguinar, because Cabanda comes up a lot. Space Marines are fighting.
He is pretty pissy about all of this.
But this story is just more funny because it's classic, GW writing when they write it well. The Blood Angels are fighting orcs on a planet called Kartus. While fighting the orcs, a portal opens and a bunch of demons of Khorne come flying out, led by Cabanda. Cabanda just instantly kills the captain of the squad and turns to just go rip through the remaining Blood Angels, at which point, as his blade comes down on them, it's parried with the appearance of the Sanguinar. And these two go in through a pretty big fight, but it ends with a Sanguinor running Kabanda through with his sword, firing off his jetpack, taking Kabanda effectively into lower orbit, and then is dropping him.
Yeah, he RKOs him out of nowhere.
Yeah,
from
super
orbit.
Cool. So, and that's the Sanguinor story. The Sanguinor comes up a lot, like kind of in the later parts of the lore. But I just like those two stories of him. One where it's like, I'm gonna help a few of you out. The other one where I'm gonna kill a demon. So, anyway, back to Terra. Sanguinius and the Blood Angels make it in time to help out Rogel Dorn and really get everything prepped. If you want to know more about how they did it, you can listen to our early cast on the Heresy. But I will say Sanguinius decides to go on the ultimate, I don't have any bubblegum, so I guess I'll just kick some ass journey.
He does go on the ass-kicking palooza. I mean, also, while he rallies people multiple times when things were just looking terrible, I don't know, maybe when you take your arch nemesis and you fly above the walls. Well,
yeah, let's go through what Sanguinius does, like Sanguinius's journey on and work ethic on the Siege of Terra. So he starts off with this massive speech to all of the Space Marines, not just his legion, all legions, all the guardsmen, and just gets these guys. He does tell them, anyone who wants to go home, you guys can leave right now.
He gives today is not this day.
But it's kind of, I laugh though, because he's like, if you guys don't want to be here, I understand you're welcome to leave. And by the way, leave would be walk out the gates to where all the gates. Like, it's like your options are stand on the wall and defend the wall or just walk through the wall and die. I don't get it. But anyway, that's not important. It's a good speech and everyone just gets super amped up. He then, shortly thereafter, cuts the head off a Reaver Titan that's just wandering through. Still don't know how that's possible, by the way. It's just written
in
the book.
It would take a while.
It's not a small head. Kabanda shows up, beats the ever-living hell out of Kabanda. Oh,
he breaks his spine over his knee. Wait for it. Yeah. After he flies up on top of the gates, gives a motivational speech / talks shit to the Chaos Hordes, snaps him down and throws him into them.
Then he takes on Angron. Angron rams him through with a spear. He grabs a spear, pulls himself closer to Angron on the spear, and then grabs a butcher nails in Angron's heads and pulls them out, which kills Angron and banishes him to the warp. Then, because he's an idiot, Jagadai, he had to go save Jagadai Khan, who decides to leave the perfect safety of the walls, leave a head-on charge into the traitors for no tactical reason. Then, after all that, he discovers the Emperor is going to onto the Vengeful Spirit and goes, I'm going too. Him and his Sanguinary Guard all teleport up there. He runs as fast as he can into Horus and at this point gets insta-killed by Horus, by the way.
Yeah, Horus goes, hold my beer.
It's not even, So when I say insta-killed, that is not a protracted battle. He runs in there, yells at him, and Horus just goes.
They allude to the fact that when Horus is so powerful because he's.
Yeah, he's full pure chaos.
Fantastic chaos.
Yeah.
He's full power Horus. But also, this is one of his greatest friends. You know what I mean? So this has to be a horrifying moment. But also, do you really want to kill one of your dearest friends?
But I will. And I actually like that they did that because, let me explain my love of this. Sanguinius runs in, Horus just wrecks his ass, just badly. But that he has to, because if Sanguinius, after doing all that fighting, runs in and gives Horus a run for his money, then how the hell did Horus and the Emperor have a real fight? Yeah. Because it's just, that's the whole point is that at this stage, the Horus is borderline emperor powerful, and that's why Sanguinius never had a chance. He just wrecked him completely. So Sanguinius is dead. As soon as Sanguinius dies, an interesting thing does occur. All the Blood Angels, at least all through Terra and the Vengeful Spirit, it's probably the entire galaxy, like the eight dudes that are not there, by the way, all go into an absolute black rage.
One that they didn't think they were going to recover from.
Yeah,
they get psychic backlashed.
It's brutal. And they start slaughtering again, not only the traitors, but also the loyalists who are near them. However, the second the Emperor destroys Horus, the Black Rage ceases. And they come back to their senses. But Sanguinius is dead. What happens next is Raldoron, I think the guy's name, who's an epic Blood Angels captain, takes command of the Legion as new chapter master. He, and this is, it gets a little bit confusing. It says the 500 remaining Blood Angels, which I read to say there's only 500 Blood Angels left out of, they started at 130,000. We'll talk more about this in the next cast, but it's a little bit confusing of like what these losses look like for them.
They were taking banana pants losses.
Yeah, and the next Siege of Terror.
Because they were in every, the Blood Angels were, if you go back and like read the Horus Heresy books, in the Siege of Terror, Blood Angels are in
front
wherever,
and center.
Wherever yeah. the everything's hitting the fan, they are getting, but they're also getting massacred because they're taking on huge greater demons.
Yeah, you know what? Let's
stuff like that.
I think, yeah, let's this is a good place to break. So let's break here and we'll talk about what happens next, where, you know, Sanguinius is brought back to Baal. He's entombed in this massive Baal the planet, not Baal One or Baal Two, the main planet.
And Baal One or Baal Two.
He's just starting. Can't be all nice in these casts. So yeah, we'll set this up. Our next cast, we're going to dive into the second founding of the chapter, a lot of the key events of the Blood Angels, and a bunch of the time of them just trying to find ways to handle their curse.
Which they've been putting pretty hardcore on the DL.
Yeah, it gets. We're going to dive more into that next time. Yeah. I mean, being a Space Marine chapter and having secrets is kind of a thing. The Blood Angels wants a little bit.
Once Sanguinius is gone, everyone had overwhelming confidence that Sanguinius could probably handle whatever,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, and now he's gone.
Right.
Like, gone. So, with that, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
We'll see you guys next week.
Months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.